Christmas is shrouded in magic and wonder, and then we discover that mom and dad provide the presents and candy is bad for you, and snow has to be shoveled and will probably give you your first heart attack.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
For my first trick this morning, I'm going to make a man disappear. Magic tricks, although I don't really know how to do any, does have a little bit to do with what I want to talk about this morning. When we are young, it seems that Christmas is shrouded in mystery and wonder and magic. Christmas is shrouded in magic and wonder, and then we discover that mom and dad provide the presents and candy is bad for you, and snow has to be shoveled and will probably give you your first heart attack, and all the beauty of the ornaments is only ordinary glass and electricity, except for tinsel and glitter, both of which are immoral and ought to be illegal. It seems so often as we grow that the magic just kind of goes away. With one hand today, I am probably going to take away another bit of magic and mystery. The Magi, at least, are often reckoned as such. Who were they? Where did they come from? How did they know? It's a mystery. Only it isn't. We actually know quite a bit about the Magi. It is not normally taught. I have told the backstory of the Magi before. I will tell it again today, perhaps in a little more detail than I usually do. First, Magi, magic. I think everybody probably catches the phonetic similarity. But let me assure you that the Magi as a people, and they were a people, was not named after the concept of magic. It was the other way around. Many years later, our word magic was invented because of things that were remembered about the Magi. The word originally simply meant powerful. And the Magi became very powerful. They had extensive religious influence, as I will relate just shortly. And from that religious influence, a great amount of their power arose. They were also, the Magi, masterful strategists, politically and militarily speaking. And from that gift of strategy, much of their power arose. The only abilities they claimed which might coincide with our current thinking about magic would be that they said they could read the future in the stars and that they had the power to interpret dreams, tell you what your dreams mean. From these, at least alleged abilities, a great part of their power arose. But who were they? The Magi. They were part of an ancient people called the Medes. If you're interested in such things, they were descendants of Noah's son Japheth through his third son Medi, hence the name Medes. If you're interested in such things, that makes them closer cousins to us than most of the other people of the Middle East, because we also are Japhethites. And so we share a little bit of ancestry. They lived in what is these days reckoned to be the northwest section of Iraq. And like the Israelites, they were tribal people divided into six tribes that lived in five separate territories. The other tribes were the Busai, I have trouble with this one, the Paratacini, the Strucat, the Arizanti, and the Budi, from which arose the Buddhist religion. All of those five tribes had their own territory. The Magi, the sixth tribe, was kind of like the Israelite tribe of Levi, priests and scholars who lived scattered among the other five tribes and their territories. They were priests and scholars of the Zoroastrian religion. And I thought this morning about saying a few words about Zoroastrianism and decided I needed to cut something out, so I won't do that. And I have my own views about the nature of all religions in the world, historical and modern. If you'd like to hear about Zoroastrianism and how I think it fits into the scheme, come and talk to me privately, and I'd be glad to have that discussion with you. But the Magi were priests and scholars of the Zoroastrian religion scattered among the other tribes of the Medes. In the 8th century before Christ, the Medes had the misfortune of striving to continue to exist as a tribal people in a world where empires were the thing. The Egyptian Empire had been pretty well established for a long time, but there was a rising, the Assyrian Empire and the Scythian Empire. And the result of this was that the Medes got kicked around a lot, bullied by the big dogs, always having tribute taken away by this group over here, or always having people hauled away as slaves by that group over there, and that sort of thing. Secular histories record that known kings from the Bible record, like Sargon and Sennacherib, pagan kings, oppressed the Medes in all these and other ways. As the 7th century before Christ wound down toward the 6th, a member of the tribe of the Magi by name of Cyaxares decided it was time for the Medes to get with the program and move into the modern world, by which he meant establish an empire and quit being bullied in their individual towns and tribal territories. Cyaxares pulled the Medes together, unified them, and whipped up first on the Scythians and then on the Assyrians. And they found that empire was to their liking. So they continued their conquest until they owned real estate comprising almost all of present-day Iran, all of Assyria, the northern half of Mesopotamia, Armenia, and Cappadocia. If those names don't all mean something to you, just get that it was a big parcel of land that bordered the nation of Israel on two sides. While the Median Empire had been growing, another empire had been doing the same thing, the Babylonians. And they had, by this time, conquered and taken possession of the nation of Israel. If you read the Bible records, you know that this happened because Israel had not remained faithful to God, had worshipped other gods, and so the Babylonians were their punishment. So the Babylonians now own Israel. And the Babylonians and the Medes shoot mean glares at one another across a shifting border. But both powers are afraid to go to really open war because neither one was convinced that they could win. And so another king that you have heard of, the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar, married off one of his daughters to Cyaxares so as to have a treaty with the Medes. And the two powers lived in peace for a while. During that time, the Medes exacted tribute and took slaves from another upstart people called the Persians. At least they did, until a man named Cyrus did for the Persians what Cyaxares had done for the Medes and transformed them into a power that threatened the Medes so terribly that the royal cabinet took their own king, Cyaxares' son, Median names are hard. Astyages took their king Astyages hostage and turned him over to the Persians to avoid war. So it was not called a conquest by the Persians. It was called a new treaty, which superseded the old treaty that the Medes had with the Babylonians. And now, secular history and biblical history come firmly together. On the night that Daniel interpreted the handwriting on the wall for the Babylonian king Belshazzar, the last Babylonian king, Darius the Mede, as an operative of Cyrus the Persian, completed an engineering feat diverting the course of the Euphrates River and marched his army up the dry riverbed under the city wall of Babylon and took over. This was the king Darius who had Daniel thrown into the lion's den and who retrieved Daniel from the lion's den. Before Daniel had been cast into the den of lions, he had been rising in favor with King Darius, and now when he came out of the den of the lions, Darius made him the chief of his wise men. I want you to understand this juncture. Daniel, the Hebrew prophet statesman, became the chief of the wise men of Darius the Mede. This is to say, Daniel, the Hebrew prophet statesman, became the chief of the Magi. Free hand to lead them, teach them, shape them. In times shortly to come, the Persians would become increasingly oppressive to their partners, the Medes. And the Medes tried to repeat their performance of an earlier century, unifying their people, rising up against the Persians, and got squashed like bugs. It just didn't work a second time. The Medes were crushed as a people and have never risen to global preeminence again. The Magi continued to be used as wise men by other powers, and from these positions beside the throne, they sought to do two things. One was to keep a network of communication active between the Magi here, there, and the other place, so that they might preserve the body of knowledge over which they were custodians. The second was, as advisors to kings here, there, and the other place, they sought to ease the plight of their conquered people. For those interested in such things, the Medes in general and the Magi in specific have two primary bodies of descendants alive in the world today, the Magda of Hungary and the Kurds of northern Iraq and Afghanistan. These are the living descendants of the Magi. But in between then and now, a few hundred years after they took the big whipping from the Persians, but well before the current state of their scattered descendants in Europe and Asia, a small band of Magi undertook a search. As I said, they strove to maintain the knowledge over which they were custodians generation to generation, and this knowledge would include many things that they were taught by their one-time chief, the Hebrew prophet, statesman, Daniel. Daniel headed the Magi past the midpoint of the 5th century, so he would have been familiar with the prophets right up to and including Isaiah and Jeremiah, so Daniel would have known this one pretty well. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. Those who live in a dark land, the light will shine upon them, and you, that is God, shall multiply the nation. You shall increase their gladness. They will be glad in your presence as with the gladness of harvest, as men rejoice when they divide the spoil. For you shall break the yoke of their burden and the staff on their shoulders. The rod of the oppressor as at the battle of Midian, and every boot of the booted warrior in battle tumult, and the cloak rolled in blood shall be for burning, fuel for the fire. For a child will be born to us, a son will be given to us, and the government will rest on his shoulders. And his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace. There will be no end to the increase of his government or of peace. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and righteousness from then on and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will accomplish this. Through Daniel, the Magi would know such things. And they would especially know the substance and interpretations of Daniel's own prophetic visions. And I can't stop to go into Daniel's visions in detail, but let me give you the substance of what arises from the visions of Daniel. Following the Babylonian, Median, and Persian empires, there would arise two more. First, the Greeks, and then the Romans. And in the days of the Roman Empire, a great stone would roll into the world, which would shatter all empires, kingdoms. And the Ancient of Days would rise up at last, and the Son of Man would be presented. Read the book of Daniel. This is the substance of his visions. All of this would be known to the Magi because Daniel, the Hebrew prophet statesman, had been their leader. And these men who of old claimed the ability to read the future in the stars were at least on this occasion given a true star to follow. And they followed it, seeking the fulfillment of the prophecies entrusted to them. What were they searching for? Well, they had known war and oppression. They had known empire and the ending of empire. They had known betrayal and conquest and subjugation and crushing, painful, humiliating loss. They had been on the top of the food chain, and they had been reduced to the bottom of the same. They had sat on the throne and stood next to the throne as advisors to power and come to know the full depth of human cruelty and injustice that always governs in the affairs of men before it's over. They had seen what the world had to offer. And on the other hand, they had the promise of a Prince of Peace whose government would know no end. They had the promise of the end of the jackboot and the robe rolled in blood. The promise of the breaking of the rod of oppression. They knew what the world had to offer. And they knew what they had been promised. And they decided that what they had been promised was better. And so they got on their camels and rode, following the star, searching for the fulfillment of the promise. They spent a great deal of money on that search, not just the gifts that they bore to its conclusion, but everything that it cost to put it together and execute it. They risked the dangers of the road, bandits, local wars, and all. They resisted the wrath of kings like Herod, doubtless others besides Herod, because they had to pass through several independent territories on their way. They did all this because they deemed that what they searched for was better than what they already knew. And in Bethlehem, at the conclusion of a long series of events in which the hand of God is easily seen in retrospect, they found him. I said when I began that with one hand I would take away magic and mystery because we know more about the Magi than we ever thought. With the other hand, I will give it back in greater proportion for the wonder and the awesomeness are bigger and grander than ever. Christmas, it seems, always comes to me as an opportunity to mention the seventh thing that I say to myself each and every day. God always has a bigger plan. I've gone through all this, the historical, the biblical, and the point of intersection between the two, so that I can ask you a simple question. The question is predicated on this. There is still what the world has to offer. And there is still the promise of Jesus Christ. Which do you prefer? It seems to me, at least, that the world has not become any less dark and awful and violent and corrupt since those long ago days. But it also seems to me that there has grown in the midst of the darkness the beginnings of another kingdom which has already outlasted several empires since the day the Magi rode into Bethlehem. A kingdom against which the gates of hell cannot ultimately prevail. A light has shone on the land of darkness, and around us who knew nothing but darkness, kingdom has come and may even now be entered into. If you have not yet known it, let me assure you that this King is worth searching for. And in this season, when our attention is more than usually fixed on the coming of Christ into the world, this King is so easily found, you will not even need a camel. Nor will you be required to bring any gift other than your heart to lay at His feet. Come and seek Him. Come and find Him. Come and know Him.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.